Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Text 24, Brahmin's Wives Blessed. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sastata Chakta Sarvasa Sapta Atma Pitikshaya Vigyaya Kila Drig Drashta Saha Prahas Itanaha. Lord Krishna, who witnesses the thoughts of all creatures, understood how those ladies have abandoned all worldly hopes and have come there simply to see him. Krishna, sit down and then shut the door. Thus he addressed them as follows with a smile upon his face. One second, I have to do something technical here. I'll be right back. Om Jnana Timurandasya Dhananjana Salakaya Aksurandalatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Chayam Rupa Kadamayam Sadati Sapadantikam Adadana Stinam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Nulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Yug Bhakti Rasam Payatnai Apaya Mamara Dipsamandam Kapambuhiya Paradhuka Dhuki Anatanastam Prabhumasrayami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasade Ghor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Sri Vrindavan Dham. Of course, it's the middle of the new year in January here, but I guess it's Krishna's grace, whatever happens here, but we've had very, very beautiful and sunny weather. The winter hasn't hit here yet, but we did hear words that there was heavy snows in Kashmir, and the northern winds will soon test us with the cold. And I've been taking advantage to occasionally go out on parikram. Sabapri is here. Many of you know her. And with my assistant, we've been going to different places occasionally. And even some new places, like I've never saw, perhaps some of you saw, there's one beautiful little ashram park. That's about an acre. And it's packed. It's called 64 Samadhis. And all the Samadhis and Pushpa Samadhis of all the Acharyas in our line are there. A very, very deep place which invokes the mood of separation, which is essential for our development and devotion, because separation is a symptom of attachment which increases attachment and therefore even in the spiritual world, even in Goloka Vrindavan, the mood of separation is essential for the topmost attachment of prema to flow. And therefore it's described when Krishna goes to the forest in the, during the day, then the residents of Vrindavan are overcome with separation. And when Krishna comes back from the forest, then the forest just dries up in the mood of separation. So even in Vrindavan, there's always separation and attachment. And in our own spiritual life, we should always cultivate both these moods to keep our, whatever meager attachment we have, to keep that healthy and okay. Someone just came on that. Can everybody hear me? Okay. That's stopped now. Okay. Okay. I just always remember Vrindavan, the obstacles that increase our determination. Okay, so I was mentioning that. And just a little technical things. Just make note, Ricky sent out a message that on Sunday I will be traveling. Therefore, I'll give the weekend the Sangha on Saturday. And this will be my last class in Braj until the end of the month. Someone has a little bit of a bad connection today. So if you just came on recently, maybe you can hang up and call again, or maybe you have to mute your phone or whatever. Okay. And somehow Sundays we never have problems. Wednesdays seems to be the day of obstacles, but we'll go on. So I wanted to just share some philosophical point. Can you hear me, everyone?
Yes, Marsh.
Okay, so someone came on with a bad a connection or something like that, and it caused a little static. But I wanted to share some philosophical point. This is what I, in my studies, how glorious, because we're studying the Bhagavatam, how glorious the Bhagavatam is. And I was reading some commentary where it said, in every other Purana, it always begins with a a question, where the speaker says, tell me about Lord Shiva, and then you have the Shiva Purana. Or tell me about Devi, and you have the Devi Bhagavata. But the Bhagavatam, the first question just tells you, let me hear about the Summum Bonum. Let me hear about the ultimate and absolute good. But ask the general question. It's the only one of the Puranas which asks the general question. It leaves it completely open. And the answer is just the question itself is glorious because the question is about Krishna. So when you ask about the Summum Bonum, the absolute and ultimate good, it's actually referring to Krishna, because Krishna means the complete manifestation of the absolute reality. I've said this many times in response, because Krishna, yeyata mam papadyante, tams tataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna, like any person, you open yourself and respond according to the love and intimacy and approach of the relationship that you have with someone. So Krishna means the fullest and therefore most attractive manifestation of, it's actually the original manifestation of the absolute reality in response to his most intimate devotees in a setting, Sri Vrindavan, that that facilitates the mood of the Supreme Absolute Reality, Sri Krishna, to give himself fully to his devotees. So it's very, very fortunate. It's the most fortunate thing to come in contact with Krishna. Because spiritual life, the principle of advancement in spiritual life, and the purification, purificatory factor in spiritual life is meditation on the absolute reality. And the more alluring, the more attractive the absolute reality is, the easier and the flow of consciousness is to the absolute reality, and the more intense that meditation is. So we're so fortunate that Srila Prabhupada and Guru Parampara has shared with us something so confidential, which is the ultimate and original and most attractive manifestation of the absolute reality, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So that's so wonderful. Now we'll get to this story, and I don't know how to say it, but put on your smarman hat and remember, part of the exercise here is to to investigate the minute investigation of the mind. So when we hear about Krishna, and we're learning more and more about Krishna, not just about his form, but his qualities and his dham and his abode, we can see what we can envision of this story, but it's Krishna, and he's with the cowherd boys. And the cowherd boys have this very wonderful mood of Vishvamba, intimate friendship with Krishna, and always thinking about Krishna's desires and welfare, the wonderful mood, the sthayi bhav, the constitutional mood of the spiritual world is this selfless love. And the selfless love is even there in the animals of Vrindavan, to the extent there's no aggressiveness, only for Leela. Everyone is thinking about others. You're thinking about Krishna and Krishna's devotees. One gets completely lost in love. It's the ultimate. This is about sacrifice, swaha, swaha, the Brahmins are sacrificed. But this is about the ultimate sacrifice. And that's of the residents of Vrindavan. And what are they sacrificing? They're sacrificing, in one sense, their whole mundane existence. They're sacrificing their own desires, because whatever desires they have are Krishna's desires, not their own. How to please Krishna? So it's complete loving atmosphere, and therefore even the animals, the tigers and the lions and even the deer, they exist in a peaceful way. So here in this sublime atmosphere, for the sake of Leela and pastimes and enjoying, can I, yes?
Yes,
can everybody hear me? Okay. To exchange this love, the Leela Shakti, the pastime potency of Krishna, creates different play and pastimes and inspires the cowherd boys and challenge Krishna in that friendly mood, that you are the destroyer of the wicked, and the most wicked thing is hunger. So let's see you destroy our hunger, oh dear friend. And Krishna, desiring to please his devotees, means the cowherd boys, and not only the cowherd boys, but the wives of the Brahmins, who are great devotees, who are in separation from Krishna, and lamenting in that separation. How rich is that feeling of devotion? Because ever since, they're mature ladies because they're married, but ever since they were just young girls. Can you imagine they were growing up as just young girls on the border of Braj, and they had the opportunity in just the news of the day to hear about Krishna and how attractive he is, from everyone who was trying to sell their wares. The Brijbasis were trying to sell their flowers and their milk to these powerful Brahmins to do the sacrifice. So Krishna wants to satisfy him, because Krishna is also a loving person, and he's always thinking of others. This image of God is just condemning, and just even Krishna just
thinking of him just blowing his flute, the threefold bending form, and just he's the enjoyer, so all love comes to him. No, he loves the devotees. He loves the devotees so much that Krishna is controlled by the devotees. Actually, the word sometimes used is he's arrested. Arrested means he can't move. He's so exalted in the way he reciprocates loving dealings that because the residents of Vrindavan love Krishna, Krishna can never travel outside of Vrindavan. He is arrested by their love. Therefore, Krishna's thinking always how to please his devotees. And therefore, he sends them to these Brahmin vadinas, these knowers of the Brahmins. And as we know the story, the cowherd boys come there to beg for food for Krishna. If you have faith, you please give some food for Krishna. He's right nearby. And they're swaha, and the smoke is coming out, and the rituals, and they're cleaning their hands and chanting all the mantras. Swaha, and Krishna's right nearby. And therefore, we see a pitfall in approaching the Supreme Absolute Truth, because the Bhagavatam is Param Satyam Dhimahi. It's to give us the frame of reference. It's to give us the purity of heart, where we can hear the Param Satyam, Radha and Krishna, without any misconception. We can actually hear about Radha and Krishna and actually see pure, unadulterated love. And when we hear about that pure, unadulterated love, we will also feel that pure, unadulterated love in our heart, which is actually the purpose of Rasa Shastra. Rasa Shastra means that it's a perfectly composed shastra that presents the drama of the spiritual world where the bhakti ras, this pure love, is just flowing. And it's constructed in such a way that it's perfectly expressed. And when one hears about that, that same love comes to his heart. And that's actually another theme of this pastime, because we're going to see how did the wives of the Brahmins become such exalted devotees by hearing extensively about Krishna. But these Brahmins, in contrast, they're religionists, but somehow or other, they just have the form of the religion without the understanding. And if you just have the form without the understanding, and the understanding is humility and bhakti and offering everything to Krishna and others, then to just have the rituals, to have the shell without the essence, then that type of religion you have to be very careful about, because it may only be used for your own ego and increase your material consciousness. And then you'll say, I am Brahmin. I am Brahmin. I know mantras. I know verses. Sakarma nipano vipro. Mantra tantra visa. I know. And therefore, this is exactly what happened. And therefore, although they had so much paraphernalia and mantras and ingredients and rituals, and they were priests, and the particular time was right, and the fires were there, and everything was there, they didn't understand the basic point of religion, that everything is God's energy and meant for his service. And therefore, our constitutional position, our dharma, the quality which cannot be taken away from our soul, is that we are humble servants of God, and we're meant to love him, assist him in his enjoyment, and therefore enjoy equally with him in a loving relationship. So this is the classic example of mundane religionists, and something we ourselves have to watch out for if we want to enter into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, which will come in a few chapters. So this is actually, I think, the purification of the Bhagavatam and our purification. It gets more and more subtle. Initially, at the beginning of spiritual life, we see four regular principles: no illicit sex, no meeting, no gambling. And we're having problems distinguishing, are these spiritual or not? When I first came to the temple with some of my friends, and we sat at the Sunday feast in 1970 in Watsika Avenue, a preacher sat down next to us, and he got into an argument with one of my friends because my friend couldn't understand how sex life was not spiritual, how illicit sex life wasn't spiritual. He couldn't make that distinction. But as you mature in spiritual life, the subtleties and distinctions you have to make about what is spiritual and what is material become even more subtle. And here, it's so subtle. It looks like it's spiritual because there's swaha, swaha, there's mantras, everything's done at the right time, they're very, very clean. But somehow or other, they're exposed because these cowherd boys, they're carrying, they're executing the order of Krishna who is nearby. And they tell them that this is Bhadram. This is so auspicious because we are giving you the service of the Supreme Lord, which is, they don't say that, but we understand that the service of the Supreme Lord is the culmination of all religion. Of all the Vedas, I am to be known. So we come, and now they come back, and they're very, very frustrated, these cowherd boys. They're so frustrated, and Krishna just kind of chuckles because this is the way of the world. When you go begging as a young man, you may be refused, and he doesn't want him to get angry at the. He says, "You just go to the wives of the Brahmins, simple chaste wives of the Brahmins," and then we see the contrast, the eagerness for that absolute reality. How they've actually seen the essence of spirituality, and they're so eager. They're so eager. In fact, they're so eager to serve Krishna. When the cowherd boys and just say, you know, Krishna is nearby, they faint. Tadarshana utsuka tatkata akshitamana saha. They're so eager, and this is the main point. They are eager for the darshan of Krishna, and because their minds have been allured or enchanted by hearing the katha of Krishna. And therefore, abhisara priyam, they go to meet the beloved as rivers flow spontaneously towards the sea. There's no obstacle when one has love or prema in their heart. Whatever obstacle, the force of prema is so good, just like those rivers from the mountain, it's so forceful, it just flows towards the sea. And then their husbands were forbidding them. And therefore there was a battle between their hopes to see Krishna and the hopes of the whole society that they don't come to Krishna. Not only it was their parents, not only their parents were there, not only were their husbands there, their own children were there. Everyone was opposed. But because of Dirga, Shuta, Drita, because they acquired a desire for Krishna, the ultimate reality, by hearing about him for a long time. Just see, this is the goal. This is hopefully what we're doing and what we should actually but we should be enthusiastic that the whole spiritual life is developing our desire to be with Krishna. To develop, and again, that word priti, love, is defined in the priti sandarbha. is the desire to please Krishna, and therefore the desire to be with Krishna to please him. We got somebody has the something on. Anyway, I'm trying to meditate on the pastime, and then okay, and then. And then the happiness of actually seeing Krishna because of this. So the their strong desire, we see that, and then finally we saw that beautiful image of them actually finally seeing Krishna. Remember, Krishna was twirling the Lila Kamala, the lotus, which was, and they see his beautiful complexion, his garments, and. So just see that scene. Krishna's there and he's whirling this lotus, just letting them know that I know your heart, and your heart is in the lotus of my hand, and I'm agitating it just by my vision and my beauty, and he's appreciating. But then Krishna's also saying, actually, you have so much love for me that I am also twirling out of eagerness. And I'm revealing this to you. So we're almost up to today's verse, so I didn't do so bad. And Prayastuta, because of hearing about Krishna for a long time, these glories of Krishna, they became the ornament of their ears. What is the ornament of our ears? Is it... What type of music is the ornament of our ears? What type of news is the ornament of our ears? What type of kata is the ornament of our ears? But what is the ornament of the Mahabhagavat, the pure souls, the ornament of their ears? Their ornament of their ears is that they were hearing the glories of their beloved so constantly. They heard. And therefore, because the glories were the ornament of their ears, their minds became completely absorbed in Krishna. And then, therefore, when they saw Krishna, through their eyes, they now forced Krishna to enter within their heart, and they were embracing Krishna within their heart. The form of Krishna, the sound of Krishna, they were embracing. And this way, they gave up the pain of separation for him. And then it was a very nice example, as a great sage gives up false ego by embracing the inner consciousness. This is classical yoga, that you give up the false conception of the self by focusing on the real conception of the self. And this is actually bhakti yoga. By focusing on Krishna, then attachment comes from our heart for Krishna, devotion. And therefore, if you have devotion, which means I am the servant of Krishna, and not only I am the servant of Krishna, but I intensely want to be the servant of Krishna, then there's no false ego, there's no sense I am the controller. Even Krishna loses his own sense of self. He so much loves the devotees. When you're in love, then real love, real devotion, then there's no sense of ego, because you're just thinking of the other person. So now, Lord Krishna, what I've described in terms of the consciousness of the wives of the Brahmins, Lord Krishna, in a very interesting statement here, it says, Akila Drik Drasta. He is the seer of the Akila Drik, of the vision of all the creatures. So this, what this means is, it's very actually revealing, in one sense, that we are naked before God. He actually can see. He actually can see. Drasta, Drik. He can see what we're actually seeing. And vision is never just dependent on the senses. Perception is also dependent on the mind and the intelligence and how you feel. That's why two people can see the same thing, and one can hate it and one can like it. One can glorify it and one can criticize it. So actual vision is in your intelligence and your heart, and your mind. And Krishna can see that. And that's ultimately what he wants. He just doesn't want the activities of devotion. He wants the heart behind it. And what Brijabasi means is that they offer their whole heart to Krishna. So what did he see? He saw them in such a state. And what is that state? Chakva sarva asa. They've given up all hopes or desires except the absolute reality, Sri Krishna and his pleasure. This is the ideal. We're not at that ideal, but we should recognize what the ideal is. The ideal is to come to a state of prema or pure love where there's nothing in our consciousness but reality. And Krishna is the supreme reality. So, Chakva Sarva Asa. So he's actually seeing. I had one realization reading this verse that in terms of chanting japa, we should understand that the essence of japa is that Krishna is seeing our heart. He's seeing, yes, he can see that we're sitting there. He can see that our mouth is moving. But he's actually seeing our heart, how much we want to please him. And if we do want to please him, he is pleased. I was reading, this is in the Bhakti Sandarbha, and it's a very interesting point, that the whole concept of God, the whole concept of the absolute reality, is that yeyata mam papadyante. As you approach him, he surrenders accordingly. And that's why Krishna is the most attractive feature of the Supreme Lord, because he's the feature of the Supreme Lord that is the absolute reality reciprocating with the most intense love. But the point made by Jiva Goswami is, even if you don't know your eternal relationship with Krishna, he's still reciprocating with your devotion, even if it's ordinary devotion or general devotion. And he quotes the verse, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta ayachati. That if you offer me a leaf, water, some fruit, I will accept it. So Krishna, this is actually the thought from this. Just see how Krishna is seeing the heart. And thus he addressed them, how? Pahasitana. With a smile on his face. A smile is the indication in relationship, generally, that someone has pleased you. So Krishna was pleased. So he saw that these hopes of theirs were so strong that it overcame the hope of anything else. And now we'll read how Krishna will reciprocate with them. And so Lord Krishna says, and this is the first words that he says to them, acknowledging their love. Swagatam vo mahabhaga asyatam karavamakim yano didikshaya prapta upanam idam hivaha. Lord Krishna said, swagatam, oh welcome, oh welcome. Oh, Mahabhaga, you are the most fortunate. You are the most fortunate. Because somehow or other, by extensively hearing about me, the nature of the eternal soul has awakened. Jivera Sarupa Hoy Nityara Krishna Das. The not just servant of Krishna, but really the full love and manifestation, the full glory of the soul has awakened, which is also the full happiness of the soul. Because happiness is love. And the what love? The essence of Krishna's own Ladini Shakti pleasure potency. It's fully awakened. So auspicious welcome. I greet some such persons in my presence. Mahabhago, O fortunate one, asyatam, please come and sit. Karvama Kim, what can I do for you? Just imagine how they're feeling now Because in a loving relationship, such an intense one, then the most satisfying feeling is when your love is acknowledged and appreciated. And Krishna is appreciating it. What can I do for you? You have come here with the desire to see me. Upanam idam hiva. And that you have come here to see me is most appropriate. It's most appropriate that you come to see me. And it's interesting, too, in these wives of the Brahmins, they're so much appreciated. Who's that now? Did someone do something? Thank you for hanging up, whoever that was. I'm actually sitting here. There are devotees in Vrindavan. It's nice. This is one of the first times I have a live audience, so they can hear me without static. Devapriya is here. And Vishnu. Vishnu is he's kind of my assistant. He comes to help me every day. And he's relishing the Krishna Katha here. That's nice. That noise kind of put me off track here. Oh, yeah. So he says it's most appropriate that you've actually come here and to see me. And I'm saying that these wives of the Brahmins are so much appreciated. I described the other day that a former student of mine came to visit me, and he became a Bhagavad Gita reciter. And he studied all the commentaries, and he also has some samskara. You don't really see this in the West somehow. The samskara for learning. They learn all the commentaries, and they know every one and every verse. So he saw me for some reason, and we're talking, and I told him what I was studying, and he became so excited. And he started to glorify the wives of the Brahmins, and he said, there's no place else in the Bhagavatam, he said, where Sukadeva Goswami says three times to Maharaj Prickett, just look, just see these women. Just look at these women. Just see how glorified they are. Because they're offering everything to Krishna. And therefore, there's certain parts in the Bhagavatam, it's not the Ras Lila, it's not Radha and Krishna, but they're glorified as exceptionally exalted sentiments of devotion. For example, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the highest prayers in the Bhagavatam, I believe outside the 10th canto, of prema bhakti, of pure devotion, are the prayers of Vritrasura in the 6th canto. And in fact, it's a fact that these verses, that Krishna, when he sees the gopis, he says the exact same thing. In chapter 29, which is coming up, he parallels exactly these verses, at least many of them. So now we'll read the next verse, which is also really amazing verse here. Nandada mai kurvanti kushala swartha darshana hoitaki abhya hiyatam bhaktim atma priyayata. Certainly expert personalities. Now Krishna is somehow or other going to appreciate their devotion in a very unique way. He says, certainly expert personalities who can see their own true interests render unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service unto me, for I am the most dear soul. Because Krishna said to them, your love for me, you coming here and giving up everything, even your family, it's appropriate. Now he's going to explain how it's appropriate. And how is it appropriate? Because Krishna is Atma. And what does Atma mean? Atma means the most dear. service should be to that who is most dear. Who is most dear, the service is appropriate. And even, it's a very, very wonderful thing when the gopis come to see Krishna. Krishna preaches to them all the principles of religion. First, he tells them it's a full moon, it's a moonlight night. Okay, now you've seen the forest, now what? Now you can go back, and it's very, very dangerous out here, and go back to your husbands, and, you know, the worst thing is if you leave. He gives so many things that you should serve your husbands, you should go back. And in one verse, the gopis defeat all of Krishna's arguments that they're irreligious. Because he says that you should serve your husbands. And the gopis say, then who actually do we belong to? Because we should serve what? We should serve what? Atma, ultimately. And what is Atma? Atma means most dear. And who's most dear? Krishna is most dear. Because Krishna is the Atma of the Atma. So actually, our ultimate religious duty is to serve the Absolute Reality, Sri Krishna. And other duties are meant to bring us to that point. We shouldn't neglect other duties prematurely, but they're meant to bring us to that point. And if there's ever a conflict with that point of the ultimate reality and other duties, then other duties have to be given up. That's one of the big things. So here, there's a very nice... there's so many things I can explain about this verse, but I want to keep the audience. I was going to explain something, but... So he's describing how it's fitting. And therefore, he's saying expert personalities, expert kushalaha, who are expert, who are discriminating. You're actually discriminating personalities. Because are who? Who can see their own true interest. And what is our ultimate interest? Our ultimate interest is the interest of the self. It's self-interest. But what is our self-interest? To know our self-interest, we have to know what the self is. The self is part of Krishna. And its dharma or essence, the quality which cannot be taken away from the soul, the actual function of the soul, is to serve Krishna. And that's the ultimate purpose of all religion. So our self-interest is to make decisions that bring us to the point of unalloyed devotion at whatever level we're at. And that's why there's the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita describes different levels of spiritual evolution and what our responsibilities are at every level of spiritual evolution. But it also makes the point that the theme of all decisions have to be whether or not the decision I'm making is brings me closer to Krishna. And that's why one has guidance of Guru, that's why one has guidance of Shastra. I read from Hita Pradesh the other day a nice statement that our decisions determine our fate. Our future is based on the decisions we make right now. And the decisions we make now, the discrimination we make now, it has to be based on a goal. Otherwise, you'll make the wrong decisions. So what is our goal? Our goal is this. Our goal is the 10th canto. Our goal is prema bhakti. Our goal is that there's nothing else in our consciousness but love for Krishna. And therefore, we have to see where we're at the present moment, keep that ideal, and move forward in a humble way. So therefore, kushalam, those who are expert, they understand their true interest. And what's their true interest? Ahoitaki apratiyata, to perform unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service to Krishna. Why? Because Atma, he's the most dear. And if you want to get pleasure out of service, you have to serve that which is most dear. Because unless you serve that which is most dear, there'll be no love. And it's love which actually makes an activity pleasurable. So he's saying this. Now, it's also very interesting, and I'm going to finish up with this point, that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although the wives were full of prema, Krishna does not want to manifest his Aishwarya before someone who has prema. I'll give you an example. We were reading this yesterday from the Vishnu Purana. When Krishna, after he lifted Govardhan Hill, lifted Govardhan Hill, some of the elderly cowherd men started to chant, "Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu." And Krishna became very, very worried. He thought, what if they start to see me as God? Then all my pleasure will be ruined. I'll come in with my friends and say, let's play. And my friends will say, please accept my humble obeisances, Bhagavan. He said, what will happen to me? And then I'll go to my mother, and I'll want to sit on her lap, and she'll put me on a throne and offer prayers. Om Tad Vishnu Param Param. So Krishna, there's verses in the Vishnu Purana where Krishna says, no, I'm not Danava, I'm not mystic, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm just your Pandava, I'm just your friend. Why? Because he wants to enjoy intimate love that's free of any obligation or duty, and that requires equality. And he enjoys that love so much. So here, and Krishna is perfectly reciprocal. And therefore, if one approaches him in that way, he forgets his divinity. It's not that he's remembering his divinity. He actually forgets. He's mugdatta. It means that he's sarvajna, he knows everything, and he's mugdatta. He's also forgetful. He's forgetful when it doesn't serve the highest reality of exchanging rasa or love. So he becomes forgetful completely. So Krishna, he enjoys intimate love, as everyone enjoys intimate love, and that's why the life of an extremely powerful, famous person or extremely rich person can be very lonely, because he has Aishwarya, opulence, and everyone will want to treat him just with respect. But people want friends. They want confidants. Therefore, even the richest person, when he comes to his house, he doesn't want his wife at the door with chamara and his sons chanting prayers and offering flowers. And he doesn't want to have to wear, let's say he's a military general where everybody salutes him. He doesn't want to have to wear all his heavy medals and things. He wants to get in his shorts and sit on the lazy boy chair in the living room and relax. And he wants to open up his heart to all the aspects of intimate love that he can't exhibit in exchange in the office. So this verse is very unique, because Vishwanath says, usually Krishna responds to the prema, he responds to the prema with prema. But here, Krishna is letting know, I am the most dear to the soul. He's responding in another way. And his point is very, very interesting. He said, this is for the sake of the pastime to invoke separation in the wives of the Brahmins and to bring it to the highest level of perfect ras. Krishna's Leela Shakti. And this is very interesting. Krishna has a Leela Shakti that reigns supreme in Vrindavan. And what is this Leela Shakti? Bhuri Jam Prabhu in this Govardhan retreat made a very wonderful point about this. He said Krishna wants to have all varieties of pleasure. And part of pleasure is surprise, expectation, wonder. But if you're Savagya, you're all-knowing, you know everything, you know what's going to happen, there's no surprises. We think we'd like to be God with no surprises. But actually, that's very dull. There's no surprises. There's no expectation and no separation. So this Leela Shakti, because Krishna is the absolute reality, his potencies, they can function independently and still be under his control. He doesn't want to have a Leela Shakti that has to be accountable to him, that he has to manage. He has to meet with all his Shaktis once a week to see that they're doing the right job. He's in anxiety. Will the Leela Shakti bring the wrong preparation when I'm eating? Will it bring some foolish person into the pastime and ruin everything? No, it's perfect. It's his Leela Shakti. So his Leela Shakti covers everything and moves the pastime perfectly so that rasa, or perfect love, is always at the highest point, his relish and the relish of his devotees. That's the ultimate reality when we get out of ignorance by the process of devotional service. When you see the ultimate reality, that's actually what's happening. Rasa vaisaha, the highest pleasure. Now, there's another point, and it's so fitting here, and I'm going to finish with that, that this young man that was visiting me also, and he was discussing the pastime, and he was describing why Krishna, even in Vrindavan, sometimes manifests Aishwarya. And it's so beautiful when someone has at the, this is a few lives for me, at the tip of his tongue, like five or six commentaries at a verse where he could say with feeling. And he started quoting Madhva Acharya, who said that Aishwarya is kept, Madhurya is kept in the vessel of Aishwarya. And I didn't get to discuss it with him. But then I was reading Bhakti Siddhartha, and a similar point came out. What it said is that Krishna always has the Aishwarya in him. Even when he's on his mother's lap, even when he's with the gopis, he's controlled by the devotee's love. And even when he's passing urine and stool uncontrolled, when he's a young child on the next gopi's house after breaking the butter and trying to feed it all to the monkeys, the Aishwarya is in him. It's just not manifest.
Maharaj?
Yes?
I'm sorry, could you please describe Aishwarya again?
There was some disturbance?
I missed it. I'm sorry.
Who is this? Who is that? Who is that? Okay. Well, whoever it was, I'm willing to explain it again. Aishwarya means opulence. And Krishna covers his opulence. Because if he manifests his opulence, then the love of his devotees will be limited to awe and reverence and servitude. And he's a Kila Rasa Rita Murti. Like everyone else, he wants to enjoy a variety of love. Well, if you manifest all your power and opulence, and you are so powerful and opulent, what to speak if you're God, then you can't ever appreciate or experience motherly love. Because the taste of motherly love, the flavor of mother's love, is called anugraha. And what is that? I am your maintainer, I am your protector. That's motherly love. You can't feel you're the maintainer and protector of God. So if Krishna wants to appreciate, for example, motherly love, then he has to cover the fact that he's the controller to actually relish that rasa. But at the same time, that rasa, or that feeling, that opulence is always in him. And in Vrindavan, it comes out in different ways. And how does it come out? Sometimes Krishna kills demons. Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. But when it comes out in Vrindavan, a very special thing happens. Two things happen when it comes out in Vrindavan, that Aishwarya, that opulence. One, it increases the Madhurya, because Krishna's friends or Krishna's parents, they all think, how wonderful is my son? They feel more love in their relationship to Krishna. And in Vrindavan, it never covers the Aishwarya. Where as soon as Krishna is outside of Vrindavan, like with Devaki and Vasudev, his parents outside of Vrindavan, they're fully cognizant of his opulence and his potency, and that he's God, and that he can manifest four hands, and that's part of their relationship with him. Or even Arjuna, he had friendship with Krishna, and he saw the universal form. Mother Yasoda saw the universal form and immediately prayed, "Now cover me from this, and now let me again see Krishna as my son." So this Aishwarya in Vrindavan, it serves that purpose. It increases the love. It never covers the Madhurya, because that sense of mamata, Krishna is mine, is so strong. And the second thing is, and Madhvacharya made this point, and Prabhupada was so cognizant of this point, that Aishwarya, or opulence, is necessary for the mood of servitude. They love Krishna as their son, but Krishna is great. So the sense of greatness serves the dinata, or the humility of the soul, which is the basis of all service in all relationships. Especially for the practitioner of Krishna consciousness, like myself, who has huge ahankara, false ego, I need to know, I need to see Krishna's opulence, that he's not ordinary. For dinata, dinata means humility. And humility is the basis of praying. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in a very interesting way. He said in India, when you get a big pot of milk to boil, let's say you're in a kitchen with a big feast, it's not just a little pot over the stove, but there's 50 gallons of milk, and you're cooking this and you're cooking that. They put some straw in the milk, and what the straw does is it prevents the milk from boiling over. And therefore, what happens is it disappears in the milk, and if you have to look for 10, 15 seconds, and that straw will come up. So similarly, in Krishna's pastimes, the straw is compared to the Aishwarya. It'll come up occasionally for a purpose, to flavor the pastimes, to inspire the Madhurya, and to create the mood of dinata, or humility. And Prabhupada was so cognizant that the basis of all relationships with Krishna, even Gopi Bhav, is dinata, or humility. And my friend that came and visited me, and he gave that, some of you there the other day, he gave that wonderful statement, he quoted from some shastra. I don't know what shastra he said. And this is one reason why I like to stay in Vrindavan. You never can tell who you're going to meet or be with. And he said, he gave such a nice statement, he said that, well, class is almost over. He said, humility, he said, bhakti rides on the chariot of humility. So even in Braj, everyone's humble. And the temporary Aishwarya, it adds that part of their prema bhakti. And also for us to hear about it. So here, Krishna's manifesting his Aishwarya. He's telling him, I am most dear to the soul. I am Atma Priya. And expert personalities like you who are he's calling them discriminating. They don't have any education. They're simply village Brahmin wives. But they have the most discrimination. And what's ultimate discrimination? The ultimate discrimination is to understand the difference between you and Krishna. That Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and we're the servants of Krishna. And therefore, the Brahmins, all that knowledge did not give them some bandhagyan, the discrimination to understand who is the absolute reality and their position and relationship with it. They must have not studied the bhakti shastras. So, I will end today on that note. I'll repeat the last verse. Certainly, expert personalities who can see their own true interests render unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service directly unto me, for I am the most dear to the soul.